well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be with you once again behind the microphone. Sorry I was gone yesterday. What was supposed to be a routine doctor's appointment for Missy turned into a an all-day ordeal. She is feeling better. That is the good news, but it definitely disrupted my schedule. So, sorry about that, but, you know, sometimes duty calls. But glad to be back with you once again today, talking about the latest in the presidential campaign. Kamala Harris managed to avoid any questions about her animosity towards the Second Amendment in her sit-down with Bret Baier with Fox News on Wednesday. Donald Trump was asked about I guess the question was, what would you how would you explain your gun policies to the parents of the victims of school shooters? Which was, again, a very loaded question. But I think Donald Trump acquitted himself pretty well, talking about how the Second Amendment does exist. You have to respect the Second Amendment, but also talked about the failures of gun control laws to stem violence in places like the city of Chicago, which has, of course, extensive gun control laws and a very, very big problem when it comes to a violent crime. Big part of that is, I think, the attitudes of the chief prosecutor there in Cook County, Kim Fox, who came out and endorsed Kamala Harris's campaign on Wednesday, saying in part, she, along with several dozen other progressive DAs, including George Gascon of Los Angeles County, saying that Kamala Harris was the law and order candidate. Essentially, right? That it's Donald Trump who wants to defund the police. Donald Trump would try to undo these common sense gun safety regulations, ignoring that George Gascon has called for diverting money from law enforcement to social services. Kim Fox has not used the phrase defund the police, but she too has talked about the need to shift funding away from law enforcement towards other programs. And of course, Kim Fox has her own record, and George Gascon too, with refusing to prosecute a lot of violent felonies during their time in office. But yeah, they're now portraying themselves as the law and order candidates, and Kamala Harris as the law and order candidate as well. Charles also received a Second Amendment related question on Wednesday. He was doing an interview with a TV station in Pittsburgh, WTAE, and anchor Shannon Perrine brought up guns in one of her questions to the Democratic vice presidential candidate. I won't call it a softball, but it could have been a lot tougher or even more specific. She said on another big issue that lots of folks are talking about, how should federal gun laws be different than they are right now? And this was Tim Walz's response. He said, well, look, I'm a hunter. I was out this weekend for pheasant season. Yeah, it didn't say anything about the had a little trouble loading my shotgun. He said, I think the vice president and I are the first Democratic ticket that we're both gun owners, and we believe in the Second Amendment. But there are common sense things like enhanced background checks to keep guns out of the hands of wrong people and extreme risk protection orders. Now, he had more, but let's just talk about that for a second. So, first of all, note what Tim Walz did not bring up. Even though both he and Kamala Harris supported, he did not bring up a ban on so-called assault weapons, which I think is interesting. 3 weeks before the campaign, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz have really almost stopped talking entirely about their support for a ban on so-called assault weapons. Instead, they're focusing more on things like expanded background checks. Now, they don't say what exactly they want to expand. You know, as things stand right now under federal law, if you buy a firearm from a commercial retailer, you go through a background check. If you buy a firearm from a private individual selling from their personal collection, under federal law, you do not have to perform or undergo a background check. But we do know that the Biden administration, maybe the Biden-Harris administration, better way to describe it, issued this executive action a few months ago, expanding the definition of who is engaged in the business of selling a firearm. So the Biden-Harris administration believes that if you simply offer a single firearm for sale, you don't even have to complete that sale. But if you offer that gun for sale and you are attempting to derive any kind of profit from it whatsoever, that you, in fact, should be considered a gun dealer and you need a federal firearms license. Now, that
was a pretty blatant attempt to enact universal background check laws, not through a vote of Congress, but through executive fiat. That order is being challenged in court because the federal definition of someone who's engaged in the business still talks about repetitive buying and selling of firearms. Whereas the ATF rule now says you don't even have to complete a single sale to be considered a unlicensed gun dealer. And the other issue here is, what do expanded background checks actually do to stop violent crime or violent criminals? And the issue is not much. You know, in the first year that New Mexico had a universal background check law in place, there was not a single prosecution for violating that law. These laws are completely unenforceable before a gun is sold, right? By their very nature, right? How do you charge somebody with not putting somebody through a background check if that gun has not yet been transferred? So it is a charge that can apply after the fact, after a gun has been sold, after a gun has been transferred. Maybe that gun gets used in a crime. A gun gets traced back to the previous owner. Did you sell that gun? Yeah. Did you put the buyer through a background check? No. Okay, we're going to charge you with a misdemeanor offense. That's how those laws work in practice. So they don't do anything to stop somebody from illegally acquiring a firearm. What they do is put more of a burden on lawful gun owners, right? It's another hoop they have to jump through if they are exercising their Second Amendment rights. Now, Walz went on to say, actually, you know, we should talk about federal red flag laws, too, because Walz did bring that up as well. And again, didn't get specific, right? Didn't want to talk about what that federal flag, red flag law statute might look like, but just, oh, we need red flag laws. Common sense things, right? Like extreme risk protection orders. Well, again, we've talked about some of the issues with these extreme risk protection orders. The lack of due process, right? In most cases, the vast majority of red flag laws do not allow you to have an attorney appointed to represent you in court if you can't afford one. These aren't criminal matters. These are civil cases. So even though it may be the district attorney or a prosecutor that files an extreme risk protection order, you're not entitled to a court-appointed attorney. If you can't afford to hire a lawyer to represent you in court, you're on your own, which tilts the playing field in favor of the state. Then there is that ex parte order, right, where the subject of a petition is not even aware that a petition has been filed. They have no opportunity to represent themselves in court to rebut any of the allegations against them. It's a one-sided hearing. A judge who would rubber stamp this request orders that guns are taken away, and maybe a couple of weeks later, you get to have your day in court. That's a huge problem, right? But there's also a more practical issue here. There have not been a lot of studies. It's very hard, actually, to determine the effectiveness of a red flag law. We know how many IRPO orders are given, right? But how do you prove that the existence of a red flag order actually stopped a crime from being committed? You can't, right? So all we have to go on is, well, there are X number of red flag orders that have been issued. And does that mean that X number of crimes have been stopped? X number of suicides have been prevented? No. One of the first studies to look at the long-term effectiveness of red flag laws looked at Indiana and Connecticut. Those are the two states that have had red flag laws in place for the longest period of time. I think Indiana's red flag law was enacted in the late 1990s, Connecticut a couple of years later. And the study specifically looked at the suicide rates in those states after the implementation of IRPO laws. What they found was that there was an overall reduction, small reduction, in suicides in the state of Indiana after the red flag law was put in place. In Connecticut, however, while there was a reduction in gun-involved suicides, there was an overall increase in suicides. That reduction in gun-involved suicides was offset by an increasing number of suicides that did not involve a firearm, which speaks to one of the, I think, biggest issues with red flag laws. And it's not necessarily a Second Amendment argument, but It is the fact that red flag laws deal with guns. They don't deal with the supposedly dangerous person who owns them, right? The whole point of an extreme risk protection order is if someone is deemed to be a danger to themselves or others, their guns are taken away temporarily. Although these red flag orders can be extended ad infinitum. So what happens once you've taken guns away from a supposedly dangerous person? Well, under these red flag laws, nothing else happens. The problem has been solved. You still have a person who's been deemed to be dangerous to themselves or others. They still have access to knives. They still have access to matches and gasoline. They still have access to ropes or anything else they might be able to harm someone or themselves with. But because the guns are out of the picture, it's seen as a success. So that, to me, is what makes these red flag laws gun control measures. It's not about mental health, right? Again, the vast majority of red flag laws have no mental health component to them whatsoever, either at the beginning to determine if somebody is a danger to themselves or others, or after the fact, when a judge has said, yes, you are a dangerous person, but we're going to take your guns away and then we're going to leave you alone. We're not going to ensure that you get any sort of help, any sort of treatment. No. You might be forced to show that you've had counseling if you want to get your guns back. But if you don't, we're going to leave you to your own devices. The issue here, again, isn't the gun or the knife or the matches or the gasoline. The issue is the individual. And if somebody truly is a danger to themselves or others, simply taking their guns away isn't the answer. We need to ensure that that dangerous individual is getting treatment to deal with the underlying issue that makes them dangerous. And red flag laws don't do that. So when Tim Wall says, oh, it's common sense, I don't think it is. I think red flag laws are a dodge. I think they are a way for the government to avoid accountability, to avoid the responsibility of dealing with dangerous individuals, because quite frankly, that costs money. We have a mental health crisis in this country. Almost every state in the union has a shortage of inpatient mental health beds. So when somebody is in acute need, when somebody really is a danger to themselves or others, there's not room in the inn for them. But building those facilities, building out those beds, hiring those mental health workers, takes a lot of money. And the Democrats, and frankly, too many Republicans as well, have not wanted to make that a priority. But it is still a dodge. Now, Tim Walz went on to say, many of those families concerned about family members and suicides or harming someone else, those are things that don't infringe on your Second Amendment. They allow you to go deer hunting. They allow you to have a firearm in your home. But those are the type of things that keep people safe. And we've seen responsible gun owners recognize a gun is not trigger locked or something in your home is where our children end up being shot. So, first of all, the Second Amendment isn't about deer hunting. And listen, I've got no issue with hunters, got no issue with hunting. The Second Amendment, I would argue, protects the right to use a firearm while you're hunting. But that's not why the Second Amendment was put in place. The reason why we have the Second Amendment is because the founding fathers, A, were concerned about a overpowerful standing army, right? But B, they viewed the right of the people to keep and bear arms as a check on tyranny. And yes, that was a not just an individual right to keep and bear arms to protect yourself and your family. That obviously was a part of the right to keep and bear arms as well. But it was also, again, about the power of we the people to protect ourselves, to protect our communities, to protect our country against the establishment of a tyrannical regime. Again, hunting? Great. Go for it. Glad that Tim Walz got to go pheasant hunting. Probably should have practiced loading a shotgun before he did, but whatever. But that's not why the Second Amendment is in place. And when Tim Walz says that these things don't infringe on your Second Amendment, Well, let's talk about that. Because Kamala Harris has supported measures that infringe on your Second Amendment. She supported a handgun ban in San Francisco that would have required existing owners to hand their guns over to the local police. In 2007, she supported a gun storage referendum, or gun storage ordinance, rather, in San Francisco, saying that even if you're a lawful gun owner, that doesn't mean that we can't walk into your homes to check and see that you're storing your firearms in a responsible way. Which I would say not only violates our Second Amendment rights, but our Fourth Amendment rights as well. Tim Walz has opposed something as simple as right to carry reciprocity, believing that your right to keep and bear arms stops at the state line where you live. So if you live in Minnesota, you want to travel to California or New York or New Jersey, and you want to be able to protect yourself while you're there, Tim Walz doesn't think you should be able to. Now, I would argue that that infringes on our Second Amendment rights, despite what Tim Walz says. He concluded his remarks by saying it is unacceptable that a top three cause of death for American children is firearms. That doesn't happen anywhere else in the world, and it doesn't happen in other parts of the world where they have high gun ownership. So I think the vice president has been very clear. Common sense gun reforms protect the Second Amendment, but also protect our children. You know, we can do both of those things without the need for new gun control laws. And that's what Tim Walz and Kamala Harris never want to talk about, right? When it comes to juveniles using firearms in the commission of crime, for example, how do background checks stop a juvenile from getting a hold of a gun when they're not legally old enough to buy one anyway? Well, what about these gun storage laws? If everybody kept their guns locked up, then maybe kids couldn't get a hold of guns. Maybe. But again, that means that nobody's going to violate that law, right? It means that kids aren't going to be creative. It means that they're not going to steal guns. It means that they're not going to obtain guns from family or friends. They're not going to get guns on the black market. And we know that that is primarily how juveniles and violent criminals are obtaining firearms. But it's also a one-size-fits-all solution. Look, I'm a dad to five kids. And without delving into too many specifics about how I've stored my guns over the years, I can tell you that how I've stored my guns has changed depending on the age of my kids. Right? When I had a bunch of teenagers living at home and my kids would bring friends over from school, yeah, I made sure that every firearm in my house, with the exception of the one that I was carrying, was locked up. Not that I didn't think my kids were hanging around with good kids. I just didn't know. And you get a group of teenagers in your house and you're not, you know, watching them like a hawk. Who knows what can happen? But when my wife and I become empty nesters, and even now that my youngest kids are past the age of majority, and we don't have a lot of adolescents coming to the house that I've not met before, maybe met just one or two times. Yeah, everybody in my home is able to access a firearm for self-defense if needed. Now, should that be a crime? Because according to Tim Walz, it should be, right? Unless you store your firearm, and again, keep in mind the gun storage mandates that Kamala Harris has called for in the past. In San Francisco, that gun storage mandate required you to keep your firearm locked, unloaded, ammunition stored separately, unless you were carrying that gun on your person. Now, again, people might choose to do that. That might be the way that a lot of gun owners choose to store their firearms. But I would argue that that one-size-fits-all policy is not beneficial to everybody, to those gun owners who don't have kids in the home, those gun owners who don't have to worry about unauthorized access. That puts them at risk. And that is again, the type of policy that Tim Walz wants to see put in place. Nowhere did we hear Tim Walz talk about things like Operation Ceasefire, which is a strategy that focuses on the most violent offenders and those most likely to commit a violent crime, right? Those are sort of strained from the straight and narrow path, and offers them both a chance to turn their life around through things like, you know, counseling, a GED program, job training, but also says, listen, if you keep going down this road, the plea bargain stop. The sweetheart deal stop. We're going to prosecute you to the fullest extent of the law. When that program was put in place in Boston in the late 1990s, more than 25 years ago, the juvenile homicide rate in Boston dropped by more than 50% without any new gun laws being put on the books. It was a simple shift in strategy, a decision to engage in targeted deterrence rather than try to cast a wide net over everybody and hope that you're going to, you know, catch a few criminals in the process of entangling millions of legal gun owners in these new statutes. Walz didn't bring that up at all. Kamala Harris isn't talking about that. Again, their attitudes and their philosophies are, if you want to improve public safety, you have to go after legal gun owners. There have to be more restrictions on that right to keep and bear arms. And while Tim Walz, again, talks about defending the Second Amendment, Kamala Harris says this all the time, too, right? We can defend the Second Amendment, we can protect the Second Amendment, and we can protect the lives of children. I agree. But that's not what they're doing. In fact, what, and this would have been a natural follow-up for the anchor in Pittsburgh, but we didn't get one. What have you done to defend the Second Amendment? What has Tim Walz done to defend the Second Amendment, at least since he was governor of Minnesota, when he did his 180 and embraced gun control as opposed to protecting the right to keep and bear arms? What has Kamala Harris done to defend the Second Amendment? She's embraced every gun control policy that has come her way, including bans on handguns and a collective rights view of the Second Amendment that means you don't have the right to keep and bear arms. But once again, the Democratic ticket didn't get asked that question. It is, again, it's one of their campaign talking points now. Almost every stump speech, Tim Walz says, you can protect the Second Amendment, you can protect kids, but he never talks about what he's done to protect the Second Amendment. Which, again, I think is a shame. Because I do agree. We can protect the Second Amendment while protecting children. We can protect the Second Amendment while improving public safety. Those two things are not diametrically opposed to one another. But we can also protect kids. We can also go after criminals. We can also reduce violent crime without adding any new gun control laws to the books. And that, frankly, is how you protect the Second Amendment while protecting the general public as well. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. In fact, let's start there with a case from Tim Walz's Minnesota. Since Tim Walz is all big on the need for new gun laws, what about the existing laws that are already on the books? Here's the headline. Second man charged with shooting in Rochester, Minnesota, gets probation. I will spoil this and tell you that the first individual charged with the shooting in Rochester also received probation. According to KROC AM, 20-year-old Anthony Lavelle Frazier and another man were arrested several days after shots were fired at an empty vehicle that was parked in Rochester, Minnesota, and a man was injured by shattered glass in another shooting that occurred on September 25th, 2023. Court records show that both men were accused of trying to rob a person at a mobile home park in Southeast Rochester several days before the shootings as well. Under the terms of a plea agreement that was reached back in July, Anthony Frazier admitted to a charge of aiding and abetting a drive-by shooting involving an occupied vehicle. All of the other charges against him, including first-degree attempted murder, two counts of second-degree assault, and first-degree aggravated robbery, dismissed by the prosecutors. The plea deal, according to KROC, did not include a recommended sentence. prosecutors were asking for a punishment that matched state sentencing guidelines, which would have meant 4 years behind bars on the reduced charge. Instead, the judge departed from the sentencing guidelines and basically sentenced the 20-year-old defendant to 57 months of probation, 5 years of probation. If he violates the probation, Frazier could be forced to serve that prison term. I say could because it almost never happens. And essentially, he's allowed to walk away with a slap on the wrist for these shootings. KROC reports that the other man charged with these crimes, 20-year-old Christian Avery Miller, previously entered a guilty plea to a charge of simple robbery in exchange for the dismissal of a felony assault charge. He was also sentenced to 5 years probation. So, you know, Tim Walz again talks about these common sense laws we can put on the books. What about enforcing the laws against attempted murder? What about enforcing the laws against aggravated assault? What about enforcing the laws against robbery? I think that's pretty common sense, right? But it's not happening in Tim Walz's Minnesota. And instead, a couple of young defendants charged with violent crimes walking away with probation instead of going to prison after their plea deals. Today's armed citizen story from the Lone Star State of Texas, where the Fort Worth Star-Telegram reports a neighbor got shot after forcing himself into a man's home and threatening him. Yeah, apparently this was, I guess, just the culmination of a ongoing dispute. The Star-Telegram says the man who was believed to be intoxicated knocked on his older neighbor's door and then accused him of calling the police on him. He then forced his way into his neighbor's home early on the hours of October 15th and threatened to kill him. That's when the older neighbor, whose home had been invaded, grabbed a gun, shot at the accused intruder, striking him twice. According to the Fort Worth Police Department, the neighbor had not called police on the man. Not that it would have mattered. You know, you calling the police on your neighbor is not cause for your neighbor to go and then threaten to kill you or to break into your home. According to the Star-Telegram, the accused intruder taken to the hospital is condition unknown at last time. The police spokesman says that the neighbor who was shot is likely to face charges, but the homeowner not likely to face charges, acting in self-defense in his own home. We'll keep our eyes open for any more details on that case and bring them to you as they become available. Finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A police officer in Louisville, Kentucky, who saved a local firefighter from jumping off of a bridge. This police officer, according to WLWT, Allie Thomas, is a retired firefighter himself who turned to law enforcement after fighting the flames. And when he arrived at the scene on October the 9th, after getting a call about a man who had pulled over on the bridge, he found this individual standing on the edge, contemplating jumping off. Thomas saw that the man was wearing a firefighter shirt and used that to start a conversation. Eventually, after several minutes of discussion, Officer Allie Thomas was able to convince the man to climb back over the side of the bridge to safety. And again, hopefully that individual is getting the help that he needs to carry on with his life. And by the way, a red flag law in this situation would have done nothing to stop that individual from taking their own lives. What stopped that individual in the moment was somebody who cared. Somebody who reached out. That human connection, right? That will hopefully, again, allow this firefighter to get more extensive treatment and to start the process of, you know, healing himself and getting better. That wouldn't have happened were it not for the actions of Officer Allie Thomas. But a red flag statute wouldn't have saved the day or this man's life. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I also want to encourage you, you know, we just rolled out our VIP Platinum membership at Town Hall Media. If you have not had a chance to take a look yet, I would encourage you to do so. If you use the promo code FIGHT, you can get 60% off of your VIP Platinum membership. You get all of the benefits of our VIP and VIP Gold programs, but you will also get exclusive access to Town Hall TV. You'll get access to all of the Town Hall Media writers. You can directly contact me, Tom Knighton, Katie Pavlich, Kurt Schlichter, all of the great writers as part of the Town Hall Media group. You can just send those folks a message, send me a message. Whether it's a tip, you want to comment on a story, but you'll have that ability. You'll also get a discount, lifetime discount, at the Town Hall merch store. I have my Be Well, Be Safe, Be Free coffee mug on the way, but you can get your Bearing Arms hats, your Bearing Arms sweatshirts, and more. Again, just use the promo code FIGHT for a significant savings on your VIP Platinum membership. And thank you again for your support, because this really is critically important to help us keep bringing you our independent pro-Second Amendment news and information, to call the anti-gun politicians to account, to bypass the media and big tech censorship that pro-2A voices all too often receive. So your support is critically important. And again, I really thank you for it. We'll be back on Monday with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. Until then, just do what the mug says. Be well. Be safe. And yes, be free.